welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. It is Tuesday, April 23rd. We are here live. It is time for the Power Hour with Pittsburgh Power. I got to fix that that jingle in the morning, that open. I have no idea why it always plays twice. You would think I would get that figured out. I keep forgetting by the end of the show. I should make myself a note. It is time for the Power Hour. We have the team here from Pittsburgh Power. Phone lines are open. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about anything maintenance. Hit that call now button on your app. That will get you in here. Or here's the phone number for today, 319-527-6791. Jump in and join us. If you've got a maintenance-related question, engines, performance, fuel mileage, modifications, troubleshooting, upgrades, electronics, emissions, anything mechanical, pick up the phone, give us a call, and we'll figure it out. All right, we're going to get the team in here. It looks like we've got Eric and Leroy here this morning. Good morning, guys.
Morning, Kevin.
Oh, well, good. We can hear each other. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
I didn't hear Leroy. What's Leroy doing?
Stuffing my face.
Come on. It's not time to eat. It's time to
really?
Work.
Oh, shoot. Okay, sorry.
That's
I
better.
I didn't realize.
That's better. All right. Who wants to go first today? Somebody with something exciting.
I don't know about exciting, but I'll go first.
All right.
I was going to go over what we have in the shop. A really wide range of older stuff this week for some reason. Got a 95 Newmar motorhome in here with an 8.3. Came in for low power. We're going to do a torque plate, turbo. We found a hole in his charge air cooler. Could install a set of boost and pyrometer gauges. But one thing I had to chuckle at this morning was they opened the front of the motorhome and the, I guess you call it the relay board, or
yeah,
was a terminal board, all the ring terminals attached to it. One of the younger guys we have here, he's, well, how do I check for cruise control on this thing? Like, he didn't know like pneumatic. Yeah, they had air operated solenoids back then, and just weird stuff you haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, that would be weird stuff for somebody who hasn't looked at one of those. We used to have cruise control on those old trucks. It was the throttle cable you'd pull out and lock.
Yep, exactly. I'm restoring an old Bronco from my cousin, the 67, and that's that was their cruise control.
Oh, really?
A lock on it.
On a Bronco,
yep.
Huh?
Yeah, really.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's got four of them.
I thought that they were just so underpowered, you just threw a brick on the floor.
You could do
and
that, too.
Was good enough.
That would work, too.
Would never go.
Then we got an old 12.7 in here for an in-frame. We have a 14-liter from Blue Ribbon. It's going to try to get in here. I'm going to try to squeeze it in next week. They just kind of dropped it off on me. But we'll get it taken care of for them, if you're listening, Chris.
Good.
93 KW W900 in here with an N14 mechanical. Probably one of the nicest W9s I've ever seen. Very beautiful paint job. Dark blue and black. All the chrome on it. Just a good-looking truck.
You know what else I like about that? You know, to keep those trucks like that, they almost now start to feel like classic cars. So
yes.
I would want that mechanical N14. I wouldn't want electronics. Yep. If I were going to keep a show truck, I would want it to be an old enough truck that it was mechanical.
This is a working show truck.
Yeah,
it's absolutely.
I love
gorgeous.
That.
I like the color combo, too, that midnight blue and the black with a little bit of white. Just looks beautiful.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And the other thing we have is kind of an oddball. It's called a pancake engine. I don't know if we've ever talked about this one before. A guy sent it in to us. He's actually looking to set the world land speed record in a bus. And I was trying to find out what kind of a bus it is. It looks like it's a stainless steel out of the 40s.
Wow.
Supposedly, the bus that this guy is in possession has had a very extravagant life so far. It was originally featured in the film Bus Stop with Marilyn Monroe.
Really?
This is supposedly
wow.
The same bus that she was in. Yeah, in the movie. And then it must have fell on hard times because it became a house to like three generations of families in South America somewhere.
That's
crazy. It was
crazy.
Parked up on blocks for a long time. Then it made its way back into the States. And it's a big cam MVT engine. And we're going to set it up probably right around 800 horsepower. He's going to match it up with an Allison automatic. And one thing that kind of was cool about it is he said he wants to hook line locks on it. And he wants to do burnouts. He said he wants to scare women and children.
Oh, great. He's going to terrorize the streets with this thing, huh?
Yeah, this big rolling 40-some foot stainless steel turbo thing coming down. I mean, it's wild looking. But
I'll bet.
He's supposed to be over 100 mile an hour already, and he wants to set the new land speed record, which I don't know what the actual number is right now, but just some cool stuff going on right now in the shop.
It feels like a very niche record, like how many pancakes can I shove in one cheek? Like, how fast can I get a 1940s bus to go? Like, a very niche record.
Hey, to each his own.
Yeah.
Did he happen to mention that maybe they were using that style because of the aerodynamics? It seems to me like we had the aerodynamics thing figured out in like the 30s and 40s, and then we got away from it.
Yes, exactly. Like right after the war, everybody was coming back, and a lot of the hot rodders too were taking the old bombs
right
and out to Bonneville and making Bonneville salt flat cars out of them because of the aerodynamics.
Yeah.
I think we definitely had that nailed down 100 years ago, a lot better than what we do now.
The only thing I can figure is gas and fuel were both so cheap, nobody cared. And what we did was we cubed everything out. We wanted to make more room. So instead of all those rounded corners where you lose so much interior space because of that, we kind of squared everything off, certainly on trailers. That was the motivation there, was to get more cube. But you look at those, and the aerodynamics look pretty impressive.
They were. They were all of that generation, too.
Yeah.
I just watched an episode the other night of the Cars That Built America, and they were talking about the 49 Ford when it came out. It was such a trendsetter because all the cars pre-war had big elongated fenders, exposed running boards. And then the 49 Ford came out, and it was sleek, streamlined, yeah, a little boxy, but it was rounded. It was just really cool to see those old styles and characteristics they had.
Well, what I remember thinking, even as a kid, is those to me looked really futuristic. And yet, here we are, 50 years later, and that never occurred. So I guess they weren't futuristic.
Yeah. My dad was a used car dealer. Well, we were an international scout dealer, too, for 18 years. But to this day, I mean, he's 84, and he can still tell me, like, that's a 56 Mercury. And that's 50,
right.
Dodge. Every car was unique every year. They had character.
Right.
And now you get on the road, everything's an SUV. They all look the same. And I'm a big car guy, and I still have to read the letters on the trunk to figure out what it is.
Not only could we figure out the make, model, and year, and I was pretty good at that even into the 70s and 80s. Anybody that was into cars really was. You kind of knew what everything was. And you knew going backwards, the muscle cars, you could identify all of those. But you're right. They were very unique. And there was a limited number of them. I mean, think about all the brands of cars that exist today that didn't exist in this country 30 or 40 years ago. We really didn't have that many.
Exactly.
And now, and that was a thing about American cars was, and there's a downside to this. The American cars changed often, but that killed your resale value. One of the things that was really unique, I still have an FJ Cruiser, an 07 that I bought when they brought that thing back. And 10 years in 2017 or 18, they had not made a single change to the outside of that car. It was identical. You could not tell them apart. But because of that, the 07 really held its value. But when you constantly change the body style, then nobody wants the older version.
Yep. A way to sell them.
Yeah. They sell more. The more often you change it, the more they sell. People want the newer version. That's us Americans. The other thing that kind of makes me a little crazy, I like the way the Europeans identify their models. There's logic to it. Like BMW is one I'm really familiar with. You know what series it is. You know what size it is. You know what engine's in it just by looking at the name on the back.
Yeah.
It's
I don't like that.
Yeah, it's a 5 series with the 3.5 liter engine because it's a 535. And they kept that forever, but we started giving cars goofy names. And then we had to keep coming up with new goofy names. And
like Bronco and Mustang.
Exactly. And now, now, why would they bring, speaking of classic cars, not that this was a big classic car, but I knew some friends who had some that were pretty darn cool. Why would they bring the Maverick back as some sort of goofy little pickup truck? That's not what it was.
No, and the Mustang Mach-E.
Right.
I was appalled.
Yeah, don't reuse those names. That doesn't even make any sense.
And they're bringing the Scout name back as an electric vehicle for, was it Volkswagen? Using their name now?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Scout purists are like extremely upset. Like I hear about
I'll bet. Well, and that's one of those things that the Scout has become like cult-like. I mean, you either love old Scouts and when you really love them, or you look at it and go, what's with that? Right?
Yes. Cult is the best synonym you can use for that. That is awesome.
Yeah, it really is. All right. What else we got? I should probably get Bruce in here. We got talking and where'd Bruce go? There he is.
Whoops.
Yeah. Oops. Hey, Bruce, good morning.
Good morning. I thought you forgot about me.
Well, we you know, they lured me into talking about classic cars and then I got sidetracked.
Okay. Well, I've got some interesting news. I'm getting great reports on our Flashpoint.
Hey, Bruce, real quick, can you get closer to your phone? Sounds like you're really far away.
Well, let me try something different here.
All right.
Is this better?
That's better. Go ahead.
Okay. Rory runs a Kenworth T880. With the Allison 10 speed, I helped them buy this truck. I'm trying to remember what the gear ratios were in 10th gear and the rears. But
hey, Bruce, what year is this?
He just sent me a message. Oh, it's the next 15. It's probably a 2022.
So this is that Allison that they really wanted to become like an over-the-road true automatic, right? They claim like good fuel economy out of this, but I never really saw this catch on anywhere.
Yeah, I'll have to get more of that information for next week on the drivetrain. But he was on his way to California. He's on his second or third gallon of the Flashpoint along with the catalyst. And at 1,400 RPM, at 74 mile an hour, instant readout was showing, his truck's a 2019. He just sent me a message. He was showing 7.4. So I had him slow down a little bit, and he's going to do a 58 mile an hour run. But from Elroy, Arizona to Goodyear, Arizona, he was showing at 78.4 mile per gallon. Now, keep in mind, this tractor's 29,000 pounds because it's got the big, I think it's an ITC bunk. So I think it's lightweight somewhere around, I forget what he said it was, but the truck's heavy.
It sounds heavy.
So,
I think that transmission's heavy, too.
Yeah. I'll have to go back in my records on what this was. He bought this about 2 or 3 years ago and bought it slightly used. And so it's been a great truck, and it's doing great on fuel, and it has zero emission problems, zero problems with everything. But it's run the max mileage from day one. And now, here's what he said about the Flashpoint. He said, it just seems to make my engine happy. He said, you know what it's like on a 40 to 50 degree cool, dry morning? A diesel engine just loves that temperature. And he said, that's what it feels like all the time now.
Nice.
So, yeah. So then I had a couple other good results. I'll have to go back in my notes and find them. And I fill several pages a day with notes. So.
All right.
Oh, and speaking of big cams, I'm helping a guy in Fairbanks, Alaska with a big cam right now. And I'm also, I have about 3 or 4 people building big cams. So, you know, that old stuff just doesn't go away. 4 1/4 B cats and big cams. And 359s and W9s, they just keep hanging around.
Interesting. I might be in the market for a truck. I've been thinking about some sort of an older mechanical pickup. I think I even talked about this once. I was going to look for an older mechanical pickup for the farm. And then I got thinking, you know what would be better? I'd like to find myself, and I was just talking about this truck the other day. I'd like to find myself an old GMC single axle tractor, the little Brigadier, speaking of the rounded corners, and with probably a mechanical Cummins, and then just put a pinhole hook on it, put a hitch on it, put a fifth wheel. I have never pulled anything with a, I can't even think of the name of it. What's the typical connector for like a horse trailer and a pickup? Not a fifth wheel, but gooseneck.
That's a ball.
A gooseneck.
That's right.
I've never thought about it or looked at it. This may be a really stupid question. Can you set up a vehicle that you could either have both? You could certainly set it up so you could swap out fairly quickly. But I was thinking I can put a pinhole hook in a ball and a fifth wheel. Yeah, and I could pull just about.
Well, the fifth wheel now is going to be an issue because that goes right over the axle where the ball is. The ball's down. The ball can go down in the floor.
Oh, you're for a gooseneck.
And you have to take the fifth wheel off.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to unbolt the fifth wheel.
I would for sure do, like I said, with a pinhole hook and then a trailer hitch, a receiver and a hitch, and then a fifth wheel or a gooseneck. That would be really versatile, and I could pull anything I wanted, any kind of trailer around, and just leave it set up like that.
Right. See, I've got went back in my notes here. Gary Heisman pulls a tanker with a 379 Pete with a C12 with a 10-speed. Boy, that was a strange combination. 390 rears, 24.5 tall rubber, 80,000 one way, empty the other. In the hilly part of Virginia, and he's averaging running the catalyst and the flash point 8.5 mile per gallon.
Wow, that's impressive. That's good mileage for that.
Yeah. He started out at 6.5 and then jumped to 7.6, and now he has it up to 8.5.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But all right.
It looks like we have a pretty good combination going right now.
Good. Good. It also looks like we have got a ton of phone calls. So unless we have anything important, I'm going to get to some calls.
Oh, that's it.
All right. Let's do it. Let's get started in Kentucky. Tom, welcome.
Yes. Good morning.
What's on your mind today?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, your gooseneck, you know, you can get an adapter for your fifth wheel to go on the fifth wheel to hook to a gooseneck.
See, I knew if I put this out there, somebody would have a really good solution for this. That's the one thing I've never pulled anything on a gooseneck. Never even really paid attention to.
Yeah, we pull them all the time on the farm, so.
Well, that's kind of what I figured.
Anyway.
I figured, you know, there's so many different, like I could use a really good heavy-duty landscape trailer. And then I got thinking about, you know, a couple other trailers, and I thought, instead of a pickup, why don't I just set up a nice little single-axle tractor? I'd rather drive that anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, something with the mechanical coming. So I think that's what I'm in the market for.
I'm done. I'm specking a new 840, hopefully, and I've got everything nailed down except for two curves that were sent at me yesterday.
Okay.
They've got three rear end options, and I didn't know, but apparently the 14 speed and the 12 speed are basically the same transmission, that just the 14 has a low
crawler
reverse and a low forward.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if that's even a viable thing to put on the truck.
Well, the reason we go with the 14 speed with the two low crawler gears and a low reverse is because if we're going to downspeed that engine as much as possible, you start getting into gear ratios like 207s, 217s that are so high, you have to have those low gears for startability. That's the whole point of having them there, is because on the other end, we're going to go to such high gear ratios, you need that transmission for startability.
Okay. So the salesman's wanting me to build it with a 12-speed and 216 rears, or rear. They also have the option of the 195 or the 205.
So if you get down to the 195s or the 205s, then you absolutely need the 14-speed. I would even think at the 216s, you are going to struggle with some startability with the 12-speed. Why not have the 14?
I don't know. That's what that's just what he was suggesting. Not
yeah,
to,
we,
the,
like
not
I said, the whole
14-speed.
The whole reason for it is because those are no longer really just crawler gears. When we start matching those with like a 205, it's not a crawler gear anymore. It's necessary just to be able to get that thing rolling because those gear ratios are so high in the rear end.
Yeah, and I'm 80,000 pounds about 80% of the time.
So startability is an issue for you.
It will be, especially up here in Kentucky or climbing up. We do have some gravel roads we got to go up to pick up at some leases and stuff like that.
So it sounds to me like, are you running more of a regional operation?
I'll run anywhere. I'm based out of Tennessee is where I live in northeast Tennessee over by Greenville. So I'll run down to Mississippi or I'll run up to Kentucky, Ohio, West Virginia area.
So what I'm hearing is you're kind of, we might even call it super regional, but not really over the road. And even though you're going to put a lot of highway miles on at times, you're heavy a lot, and you're in a part of the country with a lot of short, steep hills.
Right.
So we would... We wouldn't necessarily spec that one quite the way we would do a real over-the-road where I'm going to spend 90% of my time on the interstate and in areas that aren't just short, steep hills. So the 195s would be out. I might be looking at the 14-speed with the 216s.
Okay. Well, he's suggesting the 216. I was hoping to get my RPMs down a little more with at least
well,
205.
And it's not out of the question, but how often are you going to be able to stay in that really tall top gear in the area that you're talking about? At 80,000 pounds with those short, steep climbs, that transmission's going to be shifting a lot.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I would think
because
of your operation, the 205s might be a little extreme.
Okay. I'm just trying to justify the payment on, because the way I'm looking at it is that my fuel savings alone is going to do about 3/4 of the payment on this truck, this new truck, if I can get the fuel mileage up to close
correct.
To 8
and,
miles
and,
a gallon.
And that is the goal. We just sometimes have to be careful that driving down the RPM is the goal. We want to downspeed these, but we have to look at each operation and say, is this going to perform well? Or are we just going to be constantly shifting out of top gear?
Right.
And with the auto shift,
yeah,
we
don't
care as much.
Time.
I mean, when you had to shift a truck like this, you really kind of thought about that. With the auto shift, we don't think about it as much. So what is your intended cruise speed? What's the top speed you'd like to maintain?
Well, my cruise speed is about 70, 72.
Boy, I would think in that operation you could make huge improvements by slowing that down to 65, and I doubt that it's going to affect your time much.
Yeah, we have several places that we have time restraints, and it seems like every time I get there it's 5 minutes till cutoff.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, this is kind of a challenging operation. You're in a kind of a short haul, pretty extreme duty as far as weight, and I'm not talking about anything over 80, but being 80 that often in that part of the world, but then you're on a tight schedule. Hopefully this freight pays well.
Yeah, it pays pretty good.
Okay. I don't think I would go higher than the 216s.
No. All righty. Well, rats.
Yeah, I mean, this is your truck. I just think that
I understand that given that area,
I'm just thinking about how often you're climbing, and it's quite often.
Right. Okay.
Now.
Yeah, I was thinking middle of the road, but.
Well, see, I'm not sure 205s are middle of the road. 205s are pushing the limits. When they start talking about 195s, Joel isn't running anything with those yet.
Right. Well, I'm coupling it with the 500 horsepower compound.
Which is fine. Yeah. You know, the other thing you might want to do is give us a call back on Friday, or I do more in-depth speccing on the coaching call, and Joel does as well. This might be one of those where you just want to take some time and really think about it. Maybe we're right.
Okay.
The 216s seem, but again, in my mind, I'm going to run slower. I mean, I would not run 70 plus in an operation like this.
Right. Okay.
I mean, I have not seen many schedules.
It's a little tough.
Yeah, I have not seen many schedules where you have to run 70 plus to make it, especially in a more regional operation. I mean, that seems right. Like a really, really tight schedule to have to run that fast. Honestly, when I was at FedEx, all of our stuff was scheduled at 47 miles an hour for an average speed.
Yeah, they don't really schedule loads with times. It takes us about an hour to an hour and a half to unload at each place. Like this morning, I'm taking off from Siloam, Kentucky, going down to Bulls Gap, Tennessee, which is 260 miles approximately. Then I'll turn around and go back up to Siloam, Kentucky. And I have to be there by 5 o'clock this afternoon.
Yeah, those could be some pretty tight schedules. Maybe give us a call on Friday and we'll go over it again.
All right.
All right.
Appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Good talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Washington. Mike, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, good morning, gentlemen. Appreciate what you do. I have an issue. I have a 2013 DD Cascadia, the DD15 Cascadia, and I've encountered a code, and it's been going on since the 13th of this month. And it's proven to be a resilient code. No matter what Freightliner does, it keeps coming back. And I just, you could probably spend the rest of this show and several more, you know, troubleshooting this down in the weeds. And I know we can't do that on the radio today, but I just wanted to present you with some of the aspects of what's going on. And you see if you have any ideas sort of outside the box that might help isolate this, or if you've ever seen anything like what I'm experiencing, you know, that might lead us in the right direction, because Freightliner's had three sort of swings at it and replaced some things, and that I get about 60 miles out from them giving me a clean bill of health, and there it is again. And
okay, I've seen Freightliner's dealers have 12 attempts at some issues. So three, you're just getting started.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, and at the rate, you know, and if this is an unbreakable pattern, at the rate I'm spending, I might as well just go ahead and throw a match to it and go buy another truck, because it'll be cheaper before it's all said and done. But
where is this truck?
At the moment, I'm in Washington State.
So you can't get it here and let Leroy look at it?
Well, I mean, not anytime real soon, Bruce, but that's not to say I couldn't. But
okay.
Yeah, the code is just to give you a quick outline. I'll try to just run through this real quick. It's SPN 2791 FMI14, and the descriptive information on that is EGR valve control, and then another line that says EGR actuator wrong failsafe calibration. And you know that I understand without research that may or may not mean anything to you guys just right offhand like that, but what happens is it throws the check engine light and the emissions code on the Detroit, which is the malfunction indicator light, and that once it throws that MIL light will never go away, but the check engine light will sort of come and go in the beginning, you know, at the start of a day, and then later as things warm up, as the day warms up, as the truck warms up, that check engine light will get really persistent and sometimes never go away until I park for the night, and then it'll be gone again the next morning. And what happens, though, here's the real problem, you know, so how does that affect you? When that check engine light comes on, I have a device on my dash. It reads the computers, all it's doing. It reads the truck's computer, and I'm reading it through my phone on a mobile app. And when that check engine light comes on, the percent open, you know, there's a parameter that shows EGR valve 0 to 100% open. And it just shows me what that position is. And I got in the habit some time ago of watching that sometimes and just trying to see what normal looks like. And, you know, it's kind of all over the place is what normal looks like. But when the check engine light throws, that thing sticks at 42% open, which is, you know, bad. You know, at times when you're engine, the computer wants, you know, 5% open, it's still stuck at 42, so you're dirtying up your engine. But also, then the jake brake, it tries to work, but when that valve is stuck open, the EGR valve, the pressure that the jake brake uses to do its job is being released. So I don't have a jake brake when that thing goes, and that's the real, you know, immediate impediment when I'm going down the road. And, you know, and here I am out here across the Rockies in the Northwest. But and so Freightliner at this point has replaced my EGR valve actuator, my engine wiring harness, and my motor control module. And they say they verified that the engine updates are all current. And they've said they've done the EGR slow learn routine a couple of times, you know, multiple times, and the thing just keeps coming back. And you know, if I keep going to them, they're just gonna keep theorizing and throwing parts at it, and you know, and Bruce just described the problem there. So
yeah. So you said it was $27.91 for, like, EGR calibration out of range?
Yes. Specifically what it says is EGR actuator, wrong fail-safe calibration.
Yeah, I believe that's, like, a position error. Like, it's supposed to be at this position. It's not seeing that. But, I mean, you've kind of replaced all the things that it really can be. I'm wondering if it's something else, like another sensor reading that's not... I don't know. That's a tough one. That would be a tough one.
There's also voltage you can check on that, too. I just did a quick search online here because I'm not familiar with that code either. But if the voltage is greater than 11 volts, then you can go on to the next testing. But if it's below 11, that may be an issue. So if you have, like, maybe a bad ground, you know, I would check the wiring for sure. But there may be something else as far as the resistance or the grounding or something going on this situation, too.
Yeah, nothing's jumping off the page at me. Like you said, you replaced the MCM, the wiring harness, and the actuator. So it's like, what else can it be? So that's pretty strange.
Yeah, they replaced the engine wiring harness, but are you saying, like, in the actual charging system wiring itself, we might have a main ground somewhere that's going bad?
It's possible, but I would think that would cause other electrical issues. Because the ground circuits are you know, pretty sensitive. There's also resistance on a lot of these wires you have to check, too. It's number 120 pin. If it's more than 3 ohms of resistance, then there's your problem, too. There may be, it may look like a good wire, but it may be actually broken inside the insulation where you can't see it as well. So you may want to do, like, a pin-out test on this one.
And when you say a pin-out test, is that on, I don't fully understand that. Would that be in the wiring harness? Or?
Yes. Yeah,
the plug coming into the actuator, the EGR actuator?
Correct. Yeah, you want to check that for resistance.
Okay. So when I deal with them again, I'll specifically ask that they check specific voltage readings on every pin that's supposed to have voltage and that they check ohm, do an ohm test on all of the other pins and compare that to the parameter that it's supposed to be, which they'll have somewhere in their materials, won't they?
Yeah, that's Detroit spec.
Okay. Yeah, and here's another funny thing about it, if I could just throw this out there, too. I just recently learned that there's another switch that Detroit has for the dash. You know, there's so many you can put up there, I guess. And I didn't have it, and so I went and got one. It's an engine fan manual override switch, and it has to be enabled in the parameters, but you just plug it in on that dash, you know, sort of sub bus where all the switches are at, and anytime you want, you can flip that switch, and if everything's working right, it just engages the clutch. Even if the computer's not asking for the fan, you can ask for it, and it starts pulling air. And, you know, I'm based in Texas, and so sometimes in the summer, that's a nice feature, and that's what I was really looking at, to just make sure I'm getting the maximum cooling when the truck's not moving. But what I just discovered randomly, and then I've been experimenting with when this is happening, and I'm convinced that there's a relationship here, when that check engine light comes on, it seems to be the case that if I turn that switch and get the fan blowing, it will cool something under there to the point that the check engine light will go out. Now, if I'm on a, you know, relatively cool morning and up in the mountains in Oregon, it probably doesn't take a minute, you know, hit the switch and then the light goes out. Come down off the mountains and get later into the day and the temperatures are higher, and it might take 10 minutes, you know, with that fan running. But then it seems like it does eventually cause the check engine light to go out. And I say that because if you don't put the fan on, that check engine light could be persistent and run the rest of the day. So, you know, what under the engine could be warming up to the point that it's throwing a code? But I guess back to your original point, if the electronics and the logic is not being executed properly because of wiring, then that's a little bit of a dead end to chase that, I guess. But I just didn't know if that would mean anything to you here, to hear that the fan coming on can cause the check engine light to go out.
Yeah, that's a new one.
Yeah, I've never heard that one before.
I know, and it sounds crazy. It sounded crazy to me, but I'm seeing cause and effect when I'm using that switch, and that's the only hope I have once it starts throwing this thing, is that it's, you know, throw that and let it work a while if it's in a warm space, and it might get that check engine light to go back out. But it does seem to be a problem that might be progressing a little bit and getting more persistent. And anyway, yeah, I just wanted to bounce that off of you guys.
Yeah, I would think that they should be able to figure out, but yeah, if you ever get it out here, we'd be more than happy to look at it. That's probably one of those ones we got to look at in person. So
yeah.
Yeah. I get you. I'm headed back home, and I've got something on the personal side coming up here shortly, but I might give you guys a call soon and maybe try to schedule an appointment and try to either work my way out there or deadhead my way out there. I'm a little reluctant to go pull very heavy freight or any freight with no Jake brake working, but especially the last part of the trip coming into where you guys are at. But I might just make my way out there. So I appreciate your help there with that, and I'll get back with you.
All right.
Yeah, give me a call.
Sounds good.
Weeks out right now.
All right. We'll head off to Oklahoma. Paul, good morning.
Howdy.
What's on your mind today?
Rear end ratios. Oh, actually, flashpoint first. I've just about finished my first gallon.
All right.
And when I'm cruising along on the flat, this thing just sounds so quiet and smooth like it ain't never been. So,
that's starting to be the trend the with that product is yep. Quiet.
Yeah. I guess it likes it. Rear end ratios with my little short fat tire. So I talked to Big Bunk Mike last week, and then I've been playing on that Spicer calculator. So with my little short tires, with an 18-speed double over, in top gear at 1,100 RPM in 16th, I'd be at 52.5 mile an hour. And at 1250, I'd be in 59.5 mile an hour. And at 1360, which is about where I cruise now in overdrive, but in direct, I'd be at 64.6. Would Peterbilt do that? Would they say, okay, go for it? If you wound it up in overdrive with 228s, you'd see me on the 5 o'clock news probably, because it would go 120 mile an hour. I don't want to go that fast. Maybe once. Is Bruce there?
Anybody?
I'm here. I'm listening.
Yeah.
Problem.
So do you think?
Problem with the, that I have dealing with the car haulers is I don't have a lot of specs with the, that size tire that you guys run.
Yeah, well, if you calculate it out, it comes out to 36.44 inches tall. So that's the 295, which is what I run. But yeah, in direct, and 1250, it's 59.4 mile length.
Oh, are you wanting to change? Are you wanting to change your rear gears?
No, I'm thinking about the next truck.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm over 1.3 million miles now. Well, this is probably going to belong to somebody else within 2 years. So time for another one.
And what do you have right now? What gears?
I got 308s. So
that's what
when I'm cruising along in top gear now, I'm at 1360. I'm at like 60, just under about 64 mile an hour at 1360. Yeah. So mostly
okay.
when I'm loaded, mostly it's got a 13 in it, this truck, but. When I'm loaded, mostly I don't, unless I really got to get somewhere, which isn't very often, but because most of the places I go to, they stay open late or you can deliver after hours. And most of the time when I'm loaded, I'm 62, 63 mile an hour. And like, even on Sunday, I cruised for a couple of hundred miles. I cruised at 58 mile an hour on Sunday because I had time. I was a little fat too, so you didn't hear that. But yeah, the 228, I think that would work as long as Peterbilt would do it. Cause
right now there are 353s and, Dave and Laurie White are running their trucks right now. And, last week, I think was the first week they were in, we did an MD alignment, but, I'm going to have some reports probably next week on the 253 rear gears. With the PACCAR engine and the 12-speed auto, so
yeah. Well, I'd go with the Cummins, and I've been changing gears for 40 years. I'm practiced at it. I'd probably still stick a 18-speed manual in it.
I agree.
I don't mind changing gears.
One less computer to deal with. One less computer.
Correct. Yeah. Well, if I was going to get a Volvo, I'd get the I-Shift. But if I'm going to get the Cummins, I'm going to stick with the. I'm going to go old school here. I'm going to stick with the 18-speed. So, yeah. But I guess I could just try, see what they say. They might, because they might think I'm going to ride around in top gear all the time. Oh, you'll be doing 90 mile an hour, only if I'm trying to get away from the cops.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll let you know what they say. But
that's the problem we face when we're talking with some of these engineers. They think everyone's going to be running. They want to know why you're building a triple-digit truck.
Yeah,
and I'd say we're not doing that. So.
Bruce, isn't it crazy that they're all stuck in the mindset of you can only have one top gear?
Yeah, oh, that's crazy.
Well, now with the drive lines we're talking about, we're building trucks with three top gears.
Yeah.
Which is nice. It's nice to have that kind of flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's keep going because calls are piling up. Let's go to North Carolina. Justin, welcome.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good. What can we help you with today?
So, last week, me and my girlfriend run team, and we got to Iowa, and the truck just shut off going down the road. So, pull over, and, you know, I prime everything up, and I just had a PM done, so I called the TA, and the dude said it could be maybe a bad Davco filter, so I changed the filter out, primed the truck back up, got it cut on, went a tenth of a mile down the road.
What engine and what truck?
ISX, Peterbilt.
Okay.
So, got it crunked back up, got another tenth of a mile down the road, it shut off again. Called two different roadside repairs out there. The first one cost like $1,200. The dude, you know, he did what he could do and then was like, well, you know, I'm limited on this, that, and the other, so I had to call another guy out there. And I'm not really sure exactly what he did, but he was saying that there was some pressure building up into the Davco or whatnot, and he was saying that probably one of the fuel lines was clogged. Well, this truck had sat previous to us driving it, and I've noticed when I've changed out the Davco filter, there looks like some brown floating stuff in there, which I think is algae that had been killed when I used that kill 'em stuff, fuel additive to kill off anything that had been, you know, may have been growing in the tanks previous to us running the truck. And I'm thinking that maybe some of that algae got into a fuel line, because one of the tanks was almost completely empty and the other tank was still pretty full. And during, you know, every time I filled the truck up since then, I've been filling one side up at a time to see if there's any more being added to the other side than the other. And it's pretty balanced. I mean, it's within probably 10 gallons on each tank. And I'm trying to mitigate having another episode financially like that, you know, going on. So I'm thinking maybe the best idea is to drain the tanks, have the tanks and the fuel lines like blown out or replaced, and just go, you know, go from there. I'm just wondering what you guys' thoughts on that were.
Bruce?
Hello?
I think that's a great idea, actually, is to get rid of what may be left over. There might be some residual in there. Also check for asphaltene, too. I've never seen it on lines, but I do know that when you get asphaltene that starts to develop in the tanks, it'll continue to grow. The only way to really get rid of all of it is to have the tanks cleaned out, like steam clean, pressure wash, whatever.
Okay. If you were going to go ahead and do that, would you just go ahead and replace the fuel lines? Because the truck has about 550,000 miles on it, and if you're going to go through all that trouble, I mean, to me, it would almost make sense just to do it.
At 550, yeah. I would. Yeah, just replace the lines. You're taking them all off anyway. Let's replace them.
And,
It's
for so long, too. It's definitely a good idea. I agree with Kevin.
Is there anything that we should do also while we have all that, you know what I mean, going on? Like, since they're going to take all that out and all that off, is there anything that we should have done while we're there? You know what I mean, at that point?
I would do an inspection, like on your tranny mounts, engine mounts. You know, if you have the tanks off, you're going to have a little bit more access underneath there. But just crawl underneath and look around.
Maybe change the crankshaft dampener. Say again?
Maybe change the crankshaft dampener with 500,000. If you don't know the history of it, I mean, it's pretty much going bad already. So you might want to do that. I mean, it's not in the same general vicinity, but it's still a routine maintenance item you want to change.
Okay. All right. I guess that answers my question. I just wanted to make sure, you know, I called and got y'all's guys' opinions before I pulled the trigger and actually did anything. So I appreciate it.
All right. You're on the right track with this one. Let's go to South Dakota this time. Chad, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Working on a tune on a 99 Pete with an N14 CPL 2592. The customer came in, he thought it was at 460, wanted to go to 5 1/4. Says it was just a dog. It already had the 5 1/4 tune, or not tune, but Cummins program in it. It was already set there. So we took it from 5 1/4 to 600. It's showing 38 pounds, a boost. He can barely get to 900 on the pyro. Can't make it go over, even when he's trying. We've checked the fuel pressure. It's at 160 PSI at the pump. We've got new lines, new fuel lines, new filters, new boost sensor. We've verified the boost gauge, and he's still saying it's just a dog.
I think the turbo's too small.
Okay. Is there any... Do I need to look at the build sheet for those injectors? Is there any reason saying it's a 2592... It should have the bigger injectors to go to that, right? It just seems underfueled.
Well, and 2592 is the one that's timed at 362. It should be timed at 352. But it sounds like he has too much boost. What's his boost on the level at his cruising speed?
Well, that I don't know.
That is the number one key to see if the turbo is spec'd right. We need to know the RPM, the speed on the level, wind not blowing, and what the turbo boost is. That's the key right there.
So the RPM and the boost at on
RPM
the level.
RPM and the boost and the speed on the level, wind not blowing, loaded trailer, and then we can tell more. Because I'm guessing he's going to be 18 to 22 pound of boost at his cruising speed, which is telling me his turbo's too small.
Okay. Yeah, we don't have an aftermarket turbo on it, no manifold. I'll have to check that.
Okay. Get us the part number of the turbo.
Okay. Is there, because everything else sounds right. That fuel pressure, I think, should be 150, so we're good there. The boost is right for that horsepower. It's just that, you know, and 900 degrees, it, obviously, he's after the turbo, so it's right, but he should be able to make it go over if he wanted to, I would say.
Well, yeah.
Okay, is there anything else sensor-wise?
His boost is a little bit high. The turbo boost is high, so that's the... That's why I'm thinking the turbo's too small.
Okay.
Does the customer
and the fact that he can't get it over 900 degrees with the thermocouple in the exhaust pipe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what was that, Eric?
Does the customer ever get up our way in Pennsylvania?
He doesn't. He's in western South Dakota. He's hauling a lot of hay, local stuff, a lot of rock, gravel with a belly dump.
Okay. We've had a couple
he's
guys.
Got, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we've had a couple guys that, you know, we've done tunes, and they're like, it just doesn't feel like it is, or something else is going on, and you put it on the dyno, and it's either going to make it or break it, you know, so to speak. You know, it's either there or it's not, and then you can kind of diagnose some other issues, too, like maybe a weak injector, maybe. You know, sometimes when the injectors get a little bit weak, the horsepower will be there, but the torque won't. So we can kind of detect that through a dyno, too, so... If he were to ever get over this way, maybe, you know, take a trip out this way, we could probably help you out, too, with the dyno.
Okay, and that's what I've suggested to him. The only one in our area is at the CAT dealer, but I said at least we could confirm what it's putting out and where we're at.
Exactly. That's your best route, I think.
Okay.
You know, we can check the size and everything.
Okay. Yeah, we were looking at an injector test, if Bruce hadn't suggested the turbo. I'll get the part number off of that. See what size we got on there, but this is, this truck's got 24 fives on it and 370s, so his RPMs are up there.
Okay.
Before well, not we necessarily. Put that's almost an equivalent to 336 gears. Is he 1400 and above on his cruise at his cruising speed?
Yes.
So he's all right. He's okay with that tire and that axle or that gear ratio, I should say.
Yeah, well, maybe I was trying to do that from memory. He's higher than that on the RPM. He might have 390s then.
Okay.
He's getting up there let's
start with the turbo.
Okay.
Another thing you could do is drill the exhaust manifold and put a boost gauge in there, and let's see how many pound of back pressure he has versus his turbo boost on a level cruise and at wide open throttle. Now, when you hook up the boost gauge into the exhaust manifold, the first 3 or 4 feet have to be copper tubing, and then you can put a union and go to the plastic tubing.
Okay. Okay, I guess the last straw on this one was the other day. He says he's hauling rock with his dad, who's got a 4 and a quarter B model, and they were just dead even. And so he was pretty disappointed to be stuck.
All right. Now, hold on.
That 4 and a quarter.
Hold on. I don't think there's any 4 and a quarter Bs out there that are stock. What's the cat making for boost?
I don't know that. I don't have any details on his dad's truck yet.
Yeah, well, see, that's what we need to know. People say, my cat's only 10% up, and they're making, 20 pound of boost is stock on a 4 and a quarter, and yet they're making 32 pounds. I'm sorry, but that's way over 10%. That's over 50% power, and people forget to tell you that.
Yeah, and yep, I get that. I think in this instance, he's saying his dad's is supposed to be stock. Not saying there's not anything done with it, but he's saying compared to what his dad's done to that engine, he should be able to walk away from it, and he's not. So we're just still troubleshooting, trying to find it, because all the other measurements seem in line, seem right.
Okay, get us that number.
Okay. I will.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to New York this time. Kim, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Pittsburgh Power and Kevin.
What's on your mind today?
Hey, Bruce, it was really good talking to you over there at the CMC for a few minutes. That was nice meeting you. We talked on the phone quite a few times, but yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Kevin, you're talking about...
It's always nice to meet people.
Yeah, it's good.
Face.
Put a face with the name, you know, worked out good. Hey, Kevin, what I've seen around food warehouses are the switcher trucks. Maybe that would work good on your farm. Single axle, locked posi.
Yeah,
I've seen them with the fifth wheel and a pintle hitch and a trailer hitch.
Yeah, I don't want that small of a cab, and the gearing on those things is kind of ridiculous. I'm just thinking, I had a nice tiny little Brigadier single axle that I used to run around the city, and I really liked that truck. But I would set it up the same way with the Ed. Somebody just sent me there's an adapter you put on the fifth wheel to pull a gooseneck. So I think I've got my truck designed. I just have to find it now.
Now you're gonna have to have your gooseneck's gonna have to be shorter if it's, you're gonna pull it off the fifth wheel.
Well, that's a thought. I saw one that
or you'd be rubbing the back bumper.
Yeah, I'm sure I can make it work. I saw one that looked like it was working great, so I'm gonna work on it. I just have to find.
Well, I had a lot of issues with my '90s. With my 96 having to go to the shop quite a bit, and my F-250 actually had a Reese receiver on the front underneath the radiator. So I put a reverse triangle. I put the tow bar backwards, so I had two pins on the frame of my FLD, and then the center ball was on the Reese receiver, and that's how I'd go back and forth to the repair shop so my wife didn't have to take time off.
Yeah.
So that worked out okay. It just looked backwards. It looked like the pickup truck should have been pulling the tractor.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, the reason why I'm calling is because I have the diesel watch, or the Instinct 2 diesel. I just got the 10-inch Garmin from your store. That's awesome. It's huge.
Good.
Now I want to go from... This is probably a question for... This is a question for Leroy. I want to get rid of my Samsara, but go with the Garmin ELD. Well, the Samsara has, the way the plug's set up on the Samsara, the north is male, so it plugs into the tractor, but it also has the back of it's female, so I can plug in another device, which I have a device that keeps track of all my, it's what I imagine your scan tool, similar to that. So how would I hook that up if the Garmin ELD doesn't have any plugs on the back? Leroy, do you think they make a Y where it plugs into that and it has two outs? Oh, no. Hello?
Leroy, did we lose?
Oh, here.
I think we lost those guys.
No, I'm here.
Oh, no, they're there. Leroy? Oh, hold on. For some reason, they're on hold. Why are they on hold?
Hello?
There you go. I don't know who did that. It wasn't me, but I wasn't paying attention, so now I am.
I think
go ahead.
One running the show.
Go ahead.
If they don't make a Y, we can make one. Connectors like that are usually just generic, so you just need to figure out what you need and where it needs to go. And we can just either make you a pigtail if you just give us what connectors you need, or we can make it just direct.
Okay. I didn't think I was going to get in on the shop, so I left you a voicemail at work. So I called Pittsburgh Power and left a voicemail explaining a little more detail. So you'll get that, and then you get my phone number.
Yeah, and then do I need some pictures of the connectors and stuff. If they have any part numbers on it, that's also handy. So,
okay. I don't have a PDI tuner. I just have the PDI reader. So I can put in whatever I want. I want to look at my oil pressure because it's a 2018 Cascadia with no gauges. Well, it has the fuel gauge, some kind of idiot lights. But I just like to look at the... And I don't know if it's exact, but looking at the pyrometer, I still keep an eye on that, just like I did with my N14. But it doesn't seem to matter. I mean, it's a newer truck, so, you know, it's the first newer truck I've ever had. So going up and down hills, it doesn't seem to change. Like, if I'm pulling a big hill on my FLD with the N14, my temperature would just jump up. This truck doesn't seem to do that.
Well,
so
let me ask
the,
you a question.
The power curve.
Does this truck have an actual pyrometer, or is it a gauge where they're guessing at the temperature?
It's a gauge where they're guessing at the temperature because the PDI display unit, that's one of the gauges that I have on the screen of the PDI pyrometer. So whatever the ECM is telling the PDI device, that's what it says.
Okay. So it
doesn't
have
a thermocouple. Don't get me wrong, but it doesn't go up to like 1100 or 1300.
It's probably measuring DOC inlet temp. and the DOZ is pretty far away. I mean, you probably have 4 or 5 feet of pipe. That's probably the pyrometer temperature it's using. And that's why it's so cool. And that's why it's also so slow to respond.
Oh, okay. Yeah, everything about this truck I'm just learning. But hey, I just went 612 miles at 58 miles per hour and 9.2, and I weighed at 77,000 pounds.
Yeah, fantastic.
So I'm pretty happy with that compared to the N14. But I sat in that just over the weekend because I'm trying to sell it. So I got in it, started it. Like, man, I kind of would like to drive this again.
Did you ever drive the N14 at 58 miles an hour?
Yeah, I tried all kinds of different things. My gear ratio was 358, I think.
Yeah, okay.
That sounds right. Yep. It would do okay, but it seemed like I had to be in ninth speed to go 55 or 54. It was never happy right there at 55. But then I had wide singles on it, and when I went, originally when I had that, it had the tall 11Rs, but I went to wide singles and I went to low profile. So that changed my speedometer. So I was guessing that 55 was actually 60. So I would drive on the highway at 50, thinking I was at 55. So yeah. Other than that, that's all I have today. I just wanted information on hooking that all up. Now, hey, Kevin, I know that's in your store, the ELD.
Right.
And I have the 10-inch screen, the Garmin. Is there anything else that I would need to purchase? Will that ELD, do you know, go to my Verizon tablet, or do I have to power it to my Verizon phone?
I have no clue. I don't see why it wouldn't connect to the tablet, though.
To change all my duty status. Okay. Well, with the Samsara unit, it has a really weak Wi-Fi, and that's just enough to run the ELD. I don't know if the Garmin has...
The Garmin Wi-Fi seems pretty strong to me. I mean, I've connected my Garmin tablet to all kinds of things.
Oh, good deal. Okay. Yeah, that's all I have. Hey,
all
thanks for letting me in.
You're welcome.
Oh,
thanks
hey, is there a class?
Oh, there is no class today. CMC is next week. I think that's what you're about to ask. Let's head north of the border. Let's go to Canada for this call. James, welcome to the program.
How's it going this morning?
Good. What can we help you with?
Two notes. That EGR guy on the Freightliner, he's also going to be down 10 PSI. And Kevin's trailer sorting out. Trailer Saver makes a combination air hitch with a fifth wheel and a gooseneck. You can swap the heads.
Oh, nice.
The Shocker, I believe, does as well.
So I have
a
several
lot of guys
options.
Just put the fifth wheel or the gooseneck ball on the rear, very most rear frame rail. So that way your gooseneck ball is nice and low on the frame rail, and then your fifth wheel is up a little higher.
See, that's what I was thinking I was going to have to do, and I may still do that. I kind of like that option, I think.
Yeah, keeps them both there. Keeps them
yeah.
Both. Don't use your big semi-plate if it's on an RV. You'll crack the nose of your RV.
Oh, yeah. I've got a good air ride fifth wheel made for an RV, the smaller
there you go.
Plate. Yeah. Now, that sounds like a good setup. I might go with that one.
There you go, yeah. Okay, now a question for you guys. 2011
sure.
T370 with a little PACCAR PX6, which I think is just a painted ISV.
Ooh.
That's correct, yeah.
I'm getting a ton of crankcase pressure severe. What's the chance that the air compressor is doing it and I don't actually need a rebuild?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that. We've seen it. It's either usually that or the turbo is probably more popular than actually needing a rebuild. Or
yeah,
you have
got a new turbo on it
where it can't properly ventilate. Bruce always talks about, the hose going out, making sure that that's not blocked.
Yeah. So they check crankcase dealer, check case vent, housing, filter, hoses. They blew the hoses out and still getting severe code sporadically. It is not throwing it religiously every time.
Yeah. That makes you think it's definitely not a rebuild problem.
It was a what?
How's the oil consumption?
I don't drive the truck a lot. It's got a major leak from the valve cover that they keep blaming on the crankcase pressure blowing out the seal. Maybe 5 liters in 20,000 K, mainly from a drip, it looks like.
I imagine we're reeling from the metric system.
Yes, sorry. 1 gallon maybe every 10, 15,000 miles, somewhere like
there
that.
There you go.
Now that's better. I was trying to do the math.
Sorry. Yeah, so minor, no real like burning of, no smelling of burning of oil, no blue smoke out the pipe, nothing like that. It does have a clogged EPF, which is going to go missing. We are allowed that in our area.
Oh my.
Have you tried putting the max mileage catalyst in this?
You know, I've run about a half a gallon through that truck, thinking it was maybe carbon packing on the rings. No real progress forward on that.
Okay. How many miles are on it, or kilometers?
Oh, 318 kilometers, so what's that, 190 miles-ish?
Yeah. Have you ever done an oil analysis?
Terrible at that. No, I should, but no.
Okay.
Looking for, I guess, fuel in the oil kind of thing, seeing if it's going past the rings.
Well, just be interesting to see the iron. I won't see the iron and the silicon, but, you know, I had an Isuzu 360 cubic inch that I put in a Chevy Suburban, and then I turboed it. It was a normally aspirated engine. My God, did that thing have blow-by. But it didn't use any oil. So I just put up with the white smoke coming out from underneath the wheel wells.
Interesting. Yeah, and I don't get any smoke. The dealers went in blow by because they held the cap down and then it popped off. If I let the cap sit there, it kind of jiggles, but they're holding the cap down, blowing it off.
Wait a second now. Is there a blow by tube on the engine?
I don't know. I've heard of the quote-unquote slobber tube on some of the Cummins. I don't know. I think it does have a slobber tube, a breathing tube.
Yeah, it's got to have a breather tube. So if it's got a breather tube, what's blowing the cap off? Sounds like the breather tube's clogged to me.
Okay. Okay, maybe move from crankcase over to just the general breather. Crankcase vent over the general breather.
And with an oil sample, we can kind of dial in on the air compressor theory, too, because if I see high lead and tin in oxidation, I know the air compressor is running harder than it should be because the bearings in the air compressor are lead and tin. There's no copper or aluminum, and the oxidation is either overheating or overextending oil. So we can kind of zero in on that, too. So there's a lot of benefits to doing an oil sample, not just for this case.
Okay. I can drop a sample off this afternoon from a local one. It won't be a Blackstone or anything, but air compressor does cycle pretty often. It's got an air leak they can't track down, and it does cycle pretty often.
That could be your problem then.
Okay, awesome.
And they've been underneath it with a soapy water and a spray bottle and sprayed all the lines?
Two shops have, apparently, and they claim no air leaks, yet I have a continually cycling air, not continual, but every couple minutes she's cycling just at idle. So I think it's the engine fan, which is, they're claiming they can't get the soapy bubbles on it, but it's air-actuated engine fan.
Why not disconnect that line and plug it if it goes away?
Okay. Okay, well, I'll get a sample for you on that one.
All right, sounds good.
Have you had much luck with the max mileage fixing those EGR codes in terms of EGR valve position?
And I can tell you, we hardly get any EGR calls anymore from our clients using the max mileage.
Shucks. I got two little Freightliners with little Mercedes, both with EGR actuator inconsistent position codes. ECU 128, SID 146, fail 07.
It to me is almost like a thing of the past. I just don't get those calls anymore.
All right.
So run the catalyst and then really treat your engine good and put the flash point in with it and see what happens.
Yeah, I've been doing a mix of max mileage and a little bit of the Hot Shot Secret Extreme every so often.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the trucks that are having the EGR issues, do they have the max mileage in it?
They do.
Huh. Okay. Well, any thoughts on that one, Leroy?
EGR position is either going to be mechanically out of place or it's going to be like it has carbon buildup. Maybe that's why it's not coming back to the position it's supposed to be. So maybe in that case, max mileage would help. But that's just something that, again, would probably require visual inspection.
Yeah, okay. Okay, awesome. should cover me today. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. All right. We had a flurry of calls there, and then we had nothing. So I think we're going to wrap this up for today. We're going to put a lid on it early today. Anybody have any final words?
Kevin, I just want to congratulate you on your health show, because I've been listening to your older shows and whenever I have some time, and I'm learning a lot.
Good.
You've done quite well with your research, and I see some of the things I'm doing wrong, and even though I knew I was doing wrong, it's nice to hear them come from you. And I got to tell you, back to that COVID shot, my chiropractor, since 1979, he was the first person said, don't get that shot. And a day or two later, you were on the radio show saying, don't get that shot. And thank God that for the two of you, because some of us didn't get the shot. And
You know what's, even more crazy? So all that reading, all the research, all the people I've helped, we're coming up on 10 years on this now. We're doing the live stream now, the video, and we want to get our guests on the live stream. We just have to work out an audio issue. It's kind of complicated, but I've got some ideas. I just need some time to work on it. So we are streaming to Facebook, Instagram, X, LinkedIn, and we are trying to stream to YouTube. We've only been doing this. This is our third week, and it's only Tuesday, and I have already been kicked off of YouTube twice, and it happened again today. And it's because of any time I get a medical question, whether it's about the vaccine or it's about curing diabetes with diet, they call it all medical misinformation, and they delete that episode. And I think today might be my third strike, and they are threatening to delete my entire account. Can you believe that?
Is that Zuckerberg group?
No, that's I think Google owns YouTube now. I get them all confused, but I think Google might own YouTube. Yeah. So instead, we also send that to a competitor site of YouTube. It's a video streaming site, but it's conservative. It's Rumble, and they don't delete it at all, and nobody else does either so far. No other platform has had a problem with any of these, but YouTube, within 3 days of us starting to live stream that video, started deleting our videos.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, well, very possible we won't have a YouTube account after this week. I didn't think we were going to make it long. We will not stream the Wednesday show to YouTube. I know they'll delete us for that one. But we get enough calls about health and the vaccine during the other shows that three times in 3 weeks already.
Interesting.
I know.
Yeah, I was listening to when they want to give the vaccines to babies that are, 3 months old? And what did that one guy say? I think this show was from December 22nd. They want to give them how many different vaccines?
I can't. The number is so ridiculous now, I can't even remember it. I want to say it's almost 70 now on the list. I don't know how many of those are mandatory, but the number has...
The number then, if you're saying 70, the number was actually 72 or 76.
That might be.
I was just stunned by that.
Yeah. And there are
when we were kids,
there are some vaccines... They get within hours.
Yeah. Oh, that. This was the one talking about getting the the shot that you get if you get a cut.
Oh yeah, tetanus.
Yeah, tetanus.
Yeah. Yeah. That goes all the way back to when we were kids. Every time you stepped on a rusty nail, they wanted you to get a tetanus shot. But what if you don't?
Man.
We never thought about what if you just don't. I've never known anybody that had lockjaw. And why is it just stepping on a rusty nail? How many times did we cut ourselves on rusty parts working on vehicles? Every day.
Oh, you were also talking about hitting your head when you're working on the motorhome. And let me tell you, working on cab overs,
yes,
especially like the Kenworth that had the steps down, well, they all had the steps down. We would smack our heads so many times.
And when you do that when you are bald, not only does it hurt, but it cuts your head every time. Just a little bump on your head and you're bleeding.
You know, I've hit mine so many times that when I do hit my head like that, you just go, it's instant anger.
That's right. Yes, it is.
Instant.
That's right.
And you have to just stop and say, all right, okay, it'll be all right. But it's just like somebody rocked up and smacked you with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
But the show's good. I'm getting Debbie to listen to it, especially the one on high blood pressure and
good
things. So
good. All those things can be fixed. We do it every day. I don't care what YouTube says.
Yeah.
All right. We will see you guys again next week. Thanks to the team from Pittsburgh Power. If you need anything between now and then, give them a call. Make sure you support them. That's the whole point behind all this. We all help each other out. Makes everything work better. We will see you back here tomorrow for Destination Health. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey.